Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Deborah Bowen takes commanding lead over lying, democracy-hating California Secretary of State Bruce McPherson, or so reads the headline over at bradblog.com. Brad Friedman with us on the line. Hey, Brad, long night. Brad?
On that Bowen-McPherson race.
I'm sorry, start over again, Brad.
I said, it was a long night, a good one, and not that I have any particular opinions on that Bowen-McPherson race you mentioned there.
How does this, it looks like it's a 48.5% to 44% lead by Bowen. We've had Deborah Bowen on this program several times, and she's one of the potential secretaries of state in the various secretary of state races around the country who are very skeptical about the whole idea of privatizing our vote, of handing our vote the most in my opinion precious part of the entire commons over to private for-profit corporations who then calculate it in secret and tell us how we voted without showing it to us.
Well, that's absolutely right, and I would suggest one of the most important races in the country because as Diebold calls California, we are the world's largest voting market, and as California goes, so goes the rest of the country. She's vowed to open up the hardware and software and the whole process and make it transparent and see what we learn, see where that takes us from there. So, I mean, this is a really important race, and this is the only statewide race, by the way, that has not yet been called out here in the state of California for some reason. So we're going to keep our eyes on that. It's a real important one, and I hope that conspiracy theorist, tinfoil hat wearing, whining, sore loser, crybaby Bruce McPherson moves on and gets over it.
Okay, Brad. One of the big issues that we were talking about yesterday on this program, and that we've been talking about for, well, years. I mean, back in 2002, I think I wrote one of the very first articles talking about what Bev Harris was doing and that Chuck Hagel was the former president of ES&S after he worked for George Herbert Walker Bush for about 20 years in Washington, D.C., and then ran for the Senate after he had sold his own machines to the state of Nebraska, got himself elected on his own machines, and started raising those issues. MoveOn.org commissioned me to write a piece they sent out to 1.5 million people back in 2003 about voting machines. You've been on this thing from the beginning. You know, a lot of us have been raising these questions, not in a, oh, my God, the sky is falling way, not in a, the game is up, it's all rigged. I think those are rather tragic takes that occasionally people do, but rather, hey, what's going on? Why is this the commons of our vote being privatized, and what's the consequence of it? And one of the consequences, of course, is that these companies, in the rush to make a buck, have been rolling out what can only be described as incompetent hardware and software. Diebold does a great job of making sure that your bank deposit gets in, and that when you take $200 out of your checking account, it actually dings your checking account $200 and not somebody else's. But they haven't been able to do that with voting machines.
Well, and that's right, and they just failed monumentally, never mind what the reported results are for the moment. They failed monumentally yesterday. Diebold, ES&S, Sequoia, all of them, their machines broke down. They were handing out emergency paper ballots left and right when voters could not vote. And in fact, in a lot of places, they didn't even have paper ballots to hand out. So voters were turned away, which is an absolute crime, frankly, against our democracy when, legally registered voters turn out and they can't even exercise their franchise. So there's going to be a lot of fallout to come from this still. We're still learning, a lot. But, yeah, they failed all over the country, and it's because they are these private companies that have absolutely no oversight at the state or federal level, and something really has to be done about it. One of the things that's interesting, by the way, is that I don't know if you noticed in the Santorum race yesterday, he and the Pennsylvania Republican Party sent a letter to the Secretary of State out there in Pennsylvania demanding that voting machines in 27 counties be impounded after votes were reported to have flipped from Republican to Democrat out there. And I got to say, I support Santorum 100% in that call. I hope they do impound those machines. I hope they do tear them apart and find out what's going on there. You know, as I've been saying for the longest time, electoral integrity isn't about left and right. It's about right and wrong. And frankly, it's been because of folks like you, like Bev Harris, and the folks on the ground last night and yesterday all day who were, you know, bringing chairs and food and water to those polling places where they had meltdowns and folks had to stay online for hours. They kept a lot of polling places open for several extra hours because machines broke down. Frankly, it was because they knew we were watching them this time, and you know the patriots on the ground were out there fighting for every single vote, and I suspect this fight is going to continue for a while, especially with the balance of the Senate hanging in the balance here.
Yeah. Now, Tom Feeney, the fellow who is alleged to have, as Speaker of the House of Representatives in the state of Florida, back 3-4 years ago, commissioned Clint Curtis, when Clint was a computer programmer, to write a software program that would allow him to insert it into voting machines and flip elections. He was challenged by Clint Curtis this time, and apparently he beat Clint Curtis. Curtis is not conceding.
No, he's not. And I had talked to him prior to the close of polls and asked him how things were going, and he said, "Well, I'll tell you what. No matter what happens, if we win, obviously we're going to run again. If we don't win, we're going to run again, no matter what." So he's not giving up there. But most notably, he promises a forensic investigation of that result. He's now got the standing as a candidate, and so he's going to take a look at exactly what happened in all of those counties. You know, they had a lot of problems down in Florida with votes flipping and everything else, and so you've got a candidate who understands that and is not going to concede until every vote is counted and audited, and they actually know that democracy was properly exercised and recorded down there. And frankly, I wish all candidates of both parties would do exactly that. Our democracy is just too precious to roll over, 5 minutes after the polls close because ABC or whoever, you know, needs an election result. Hang in there and make sure every damn vote is counted, no matter, Republican, Democrat, Green, Libertarian, Independent, I don't care. So I congratulate Clint Curtis for that, and it will be interesting as we move ahead because we've actually got exit polls in a number of races around the country, and the data from that, these are independent exit polls that VelvetRevolution.us and others have been running. It'll be interesting to compare those results with the actual final results, and we'll see what we have. I suspect we're going to learn quite a bit in the days ahead about these machines.
I look forward to it. Brad Friedman, thanks for the great work you're doing over at bradblog.com and for being on the program.
Back at you, my friend. Thanks a bunch.
Good talking with you. This is what happened last night. Here we have a Democratic victory in the House, and this is absolutely great. You know, Nancy Pelosi is going to be Speaker. Now the Democrats are going to have the power of subpoena. This is the key to the whole thing, by the way, to taking down the Bush machine, to taking down the Bush regime, or at least bringing them back to the foundational ideals of democracy. The key to the whole thing is having the power to investigate. During the 40 years that the Democrats controlled the House of Representatives, before 1994 when the Republicans took over, and they've held it for 12 years now, prior to the 12 years of Republican rule, when the Democrats ran the House, they routinely and just as a matter of course, gave Republicans the power of the subpoena, gave them the ability to investigate things, let them run, just constantly. But the Republicans have just, under an absolutely unprecedented, never been seen before, set of rules, have said, no, you can't do that. We're not going to allow this to happen. The loss of democracy in the United States, George W. Bush saying that he can wiretap anybody anytime he wants. He can listen into Democrats. He can listen into strategy sessions. He's not going to run it by a judge. He doesn't want any oversight. He can, the hacking of Ted Kennedy's computer that was done out of Orrin Hatch's office 2 years ago never got investigated. All of these things. Now somebody's going to be able to look into this stuff. And the bigger point here is the story of the parade. And, this is just such a critical story about politics in the United States, how politics work, and how politics move forward in the United States, how we take control of politics in the United States. We're seeing the pendulum swing back, but is that because our leadership is changing? Is that because the media is changing? No, I would say not. And in fact, is that because the Republicans have screwed up? I would say no also. I know that the spin on this thing, the right-wing talking points, the major Republican spin on this is the Democrats didn't win, the Republicans lost. I would say no. That's absolutely not the case. The Democrats have been putting forward a series, we're going to protect the environment. We're going to protect Social Security. We want to protect working people. We want to raise the minimum wage. We want to strengthen the infrastructure of the United States. We want to protect the country from threats, foreign and domestic. We want to make the United States energy independent. We want to boost the aid to post-secondary education, to college education. All of these things opposed by the Republicans. The Democrats won. But let me tell you about the parade right after this. 16 minutes past the hour.
And I'm taking my country back. Boys, you ain't been doing her right. Oh, I've been watching you and I don't like how you've been treating my scars and stripes. You took our jobs and some overseas. Now we owe billions to the red Chinese. You blew the and you botched Iraq, so I'm taking my country back.
Indeed we are, and we have, or at least one good chunk of it. We'll see what happens with the Senate. We've got Virginia and Montana still hanging in the balance, but the House of Representatives firmly in the hands of the Democrats, and already the spinning is beginning, or has begun. Welcome back to the program. Tom Hartman here with you. The place where reason is our lifestyle choice. 866-440-THOM, our telephone number, 866-440-8466. TomHartman.com, our website, if you want to drop into our live chat room or visit our message boards, our blogs, blog area. The spinning is beginning, has already begun. The Republicans are out there saying, well, the only Democrats that got elected were conservative Democrats. Wrong. Sorry. Not the case. Not at all. Not even close. And in fact, it's not just the Republicans who are trying to spin it that way. You've got Charlie Schumer and Rahm Emanuel trying to spin it that way. You've got these guys from the DLC, these conservative Democrats who are out there. This is a great victory for the conservative. Well, the fact of the matter is that in a lot of races, Rahm Emanuel, who was the guy who held the purse strings, who decided who got funding to run in the primaries, that Rahm Emanuel was not giving money to the most progressive of the Democratic candidates and instead was giving money to the more conservative of the Democratic candidates, those who would be beholden to him, those who would sing his tune, those who would go along with the Democratic Leadership Council's agenda rather than the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party's agenda. To the extent that this is a victory for the Democratic Party, it's Howard Dean's victory. He put together the 50-state strategy. But back to the parade. I have people, I had somebody the other day, I think it was at a book signing I was at, said, you know, we need to start electing good leaders here in the United States. And it is just, we have to get it in America that it never comes from the top down. You know, it's that old cliche from Margaret Mead, you know, never think that change, that a small group of dedicated people have failed to change the world. I don't remember the exact way. Indeed, it's never happened any other way but that. I'm loud mangling the quote. But the point is that it is small groups of people. It is we the people. It is us producing change, getting out there, getting active, galvanizing public opinion. Whether it was Brown versus Board of Education at the Supreme Court level, whether it was Roe v. Wade, whether it was, I mean, Teddy Roosevelt elected Vice President of the United States in 1901 as a white bred, wealthy, Republican white guy, right? And he becomes, you know, one of the more progressive presidents in history. Franklin Roosevelt being elected president in 1932 on a very moderate platform. Abraham Lincoln, and read the Lincoln-Douglas debates, Abraham Lincoln running saying that he's not going to end slavery. I mean, the Emancipation Proclamation came after the Civil War began, after he was president. What you see is repeatedly throughout history, the Revolutionary War, Jimmy Carter documents this really well in his novel about it, but, you know, you can read any history book on this. Only about a third of Americans were solidly in favor of fighting the Revolutionary War in 1776. It is, but by the time things got really rolling, people got on board. Once you get the parade going down the street, and it doesn't even have to be the majority, it doesn't even have to be a 50% parade, it just has to be a significant one. Once you get the parade going down the street, some politician is going to run out in front of it and lift the flag and say, hey, look at this, this is my parade. And that's the way it should be. That's the way it should be, which means that because we elect representatives in the United States, we don't elect leaders, which means that the work that we have to do is to be the parade, is to be out there constantly on a regular basis. You know, Bill Scher over in the Huffington Post blog, he says, aren't you glad you didn't move to Canada? Yeah. You know, this is not just a turning point. This is and not just a repudiation of Bush and Bush's policies. This is America embracing, particularly in the most progressive of races. I mean, look at, you know, Bernie Sanders winning in Vermont, for example. This is in the most progressive of races. And some of the conservative Democrats not quite making it. You know, Tammy Duckworth. I mean, look at some of those races where people who they had progressives running against them in the primaries. Rahm Emanuel would not help the progressives. Poured $3 million into Tammy Duckworth's race. The people of the United States want progressives. I had somebody call into my local show on KPOJ earlier today and say, well, you know, the extreme liberal agenda. And I said, wait a minute, what is the extreme liberal agenda? It's the extreme one. And I'm like, you mean, and he says, Nancy Pelosi represents it. She comes from that last bastion of the 60s, San Francisco. And I said, oh, really? Name one policy issue that is extreme liberal. Please, name one. Cleaning up the environment? No, I don't think so. Supporting organized labor? No, I don't think so. Trade policy that protects jobs in America? I don't think so. What is an extreme liberal? They can't tell you. It's not even a label. It's a swear word. It's an epithet. It's a phrase that they're using to try and disempower the mainstream of America. 27 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with your calls after this.
Why don't we liberate these United States? We're the ones who need it worse. Let the rest of the world help us for change, and let's rebuild America first. Our highways and bridges are falling apart. Who's blessed? Who has been cursed? There's things to be done all over the world, but let's rebuild America first.
You tell them Merle Haggard. I'm telling you, when the Republicans have lost Merle Haggard, they have lost America. That's the guy who sang Okie from Muskogee. You know, we don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee. Yeah. And now he's singing this anti-Bush song, or anti-Republican song, really, is what it boils down to. Welcome back. 35 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Barry in Arizona. Hey, Barry, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. First of all, I'd like to say congratulations on a wonderful job on what you did last night with covering the elections. I listened to the whole thing. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, Air America did a great job, indeed.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing, and since you are a scholar of the Constitution, I would like to know, because I'm not understanding, these conservatives are talking about, you know, what America is and everything, while they're systematically just taking away my rights. It seems to me that the founding fathers were about as liberal as you can get.
Well, they call themselves liberal. The Enlightenment, which is what the American Revolution came out of, was the beginning of the whole. The word liberal came out of that time period. George Washington called himself a liberal.
Yeah, I don't understand how these people can be proclaiming that they are upholding the Constitution when I see my rights eroding. I'll go ahead and let off, and I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Sure. Okay. Thanks a lot, Jerry. No, that's the bottom line. I mean, if you look at the historic cleavage between liberals and conservatives, and going back to the founding of this nation, you had conservatives like John Adams and Alexander Hamilton, and you had liberals like Thomas Jefferson and James Madison and George Washington and John Jay. And the liberals were operating out of the worldview that humans are fundamentally good and decent, and if we give the maximum amount of power to the maximum number of people, they'll do the right thing. And that's called government of, by, and for we the people. It's democracy in a constitutionally limited republic. That was their idea. The conservatives were like, you can't quite have all that democracy. And so John Adams, for example, in 1898, or 1798, the 2 years into his presidency, John Adams was president for 4 years, from 1800, the election of 1800, when he followed George Washington, and then he was beaten by Thomas Jefferson in 1800, what's referred to as the Revolution of 1800. And Jefferson was his vice president, not because they were allies, but because back then the Constitution said whoever got the second largest number of votes for president became the vice president. So you had John Adams as president, Jefferson as vice president, and in 1798, Adams pushes through Congress and gets passed by one vote, in the House of Representatives, gets passed the Alien and Sedition Acts, which gave him permission to throw into jail publishers of newspapers who spoke out against him, which he did. In fact, before he even signed it, the day that he was to sign it, he had Benjamin Franklin Bach, who was Ben Franklin's grandson, publish the Aurora, a newspaper out of Massachusetts, thrown into prison for the next 2 years because Benjamin Franklin Bach had dared to say that John Adams was old, balding, toothless, and querulous, you know, combative. And he threw him into jail. I mean, Luther Baldwin was the town alcoholic in... It was Trenton, New Jersey. He was the town drunk, and he's sitting in a bar, and John Adams, actually his wife Abigail, had come up with this idea that whenever they came through town, that the local militia should come out and shoot cannons, and everybody should yell, God save, or long live President John Adams. And so he's going through town, and Luther Baldwin's sitting in the bar, drunk as a skunk, as he usually was. And he hears the cannons go off, and he says to the bartender, they're firing the cannons. It must be John Adams going through town. I don't care if they fire one at his arse. And the bartender was a Federalist, John Adams' party, and he turned Baldwin in, and this guy spent the next 2 years in prison for speaking out against the president. It's the exact same thing that would happen to you if you were to try and show up at a Bush rally and leave the free speech zone, or the no speech zone, as I like to call it. And I mean, when Jefferson came into office, the first thing he did was let 20 newspaper publishers out of jail, give them reparations and an official apology. I mean, you had a member, Matthew Lyon, was the representative from Vermont in 1798. The congressman from Vermont, he stood up on the floor of the House of Representatives and said that Roger Griswold, the congressman from Connecticut, was conspiring with John Adams to serve the needs and interests of the rich in America and screw the working people. And so Griswold grabs a poker out of the fireplace there in the House, on the floor of the House of Representatives, and comes after him. They get into this fight. Adams has Matthew Lyon arrested, puts him on horseback in chains, and sends him up to Vergennes, Vermont, where he spends the next 2 years in an unheated jail cell, runs for re-election, and wins in the election of 1800. I mean, that's how bad it's gotten. Right? That's the conservative worldview. John Adams, the conservative worldview. You can't trust the people. That's what they're all about. And you know, George W. Bush is just modeling that in so many ways. And so when people say, well, I'm a conservative, you say, yeah, okay, John Adams, the other historic conservatives. It's not a label that I'd want to put on myself. I just tell you, right there. Brian in Salt Lake City, Utah. Hey, Brian, what's on your mind today?
Well, Tom, I just had the most amazing experience. I'm in Salt Lake City because I'm on a layover back to Orange County, where I was just at the East Bay. So hi to everyone around the Quake, by the way. They're listening in San Francisco. The reason I was there in the East Bay is I decided to fly in for the last 3 days before the election so I could help out with the California 11th, the congressional district, which we just won last night. And it was
good on you.
This was such an amazing experience, because you talk about we all want to believe it. You know, the idea that, you know, democracy begins with us, and that we can, it is supposed to be about the people, and that we can make a difference in coming together and everything. And this, it was such a testament to the fact that it can work the way it's supposed to. You know, the idea of it's not being about, you know, putting your hand out and getting the big contributions from the big special interest groups, that it can work from going out to the people and saying, you know, and doing it the right way, you know, doing it with the networks. Because, and we were not supposed to win this one. This was not one of the ones they were looking at. And it was because this guy, Jerry McNerney, our new congressman here in California, this guy had so much integrity. I mean, he refused to take any of the big money group, and he did it. It was a true Netroots, the way that I'm sure, like, almost, I think any progressive candidate would have loved to have run a race like this. I mean, it was so amazing to be a part of this. I look around, and my first day there, I was asking, okay, well, who's the staff and who's the volunteers? They were all volunteers. There was one person that was, like, paid on that staff running that day. We won it by 5 points. It was such an amazing experience, and it shows that it can work, and the people and progressive candidates like your listeners that really believe in this kind of stuff, that might think, you know, it's a nice idea, but it can't work right now. There's no other way to really get that voice to get on the ballot to win unless you sell out at one level or another. And
it's just wrong.
It's just wrong.
The bottom line is people in America are looking for progressive candidates. They're looking for candidates who will stand up and say, yes, these are the things I believe in. And I'll tell you, the battle has just begun. It didn't just end. The battle has just begun for the heart and soul of the Republican Party and the United States of America. You've got Republican conservatives spinning this that only the Republican light Democrats were the ones who won, which is in fact not the case, as you, Brian, are pointing out right now.
I know I saw it last night.
You've got the Rahm Emanuel faction inside the Democratic Party who are saying the same thing. They're taking credit for this victory. They're saying, oh yeah, we did this 50-state strategy, and you know, Rahm Emanuel and Chuck Schumer, they pulled this thing out of the hat. Well, I'm sorry, it was Howard Dean's idea. These guys fought him tooth and nail on this thing, and he's getting no credit for it at all, and I think that's just horrible. You know, it's horrible. And we need to be saying, no, it is about people like you, Brian, getting on the ground. It's us getting involved and waking people up and holding up the issues and saying, these are the things that we stand for. And I'm still trying to figure out what's this radical liberal agenda that everybody's talking about on television, all these talking heads. As far as I can tell, it is raise the minimum wage, strengthen the right of workers to unionize, possibly break up big huge corporate conglomerates, going back to a bill that was passed in 1881 by Senator Sherman from Ohio, a Republican, by the way, the Sherman Antitrust Act. This is not weird radical stuff. I mean, I suppose it's radical if you're the head of General Electric, but
it's a myth. And another myth is the idea that this whole Netroots thing is nice and fun, and it's nice to see how, you know, get these moral victories where the candidates get close. But, you know, when it comes down to it, it doesn't really work. It works.
Yeah.
And it is such an amazing experience to be a part of it. And anybody out there, anybody listening, because this, I had never really done it before. And if I had any idea that it was such like a life-changing kind of an experience. I mean, I was afraid I was going to get choked up here on the phone last night, because I was, when they announced that he had won last night and he was giving his speech, I mean, I got tears in my eyes. I was like, wow, yeah. You know, this really can work. We're not, you know, with two stolen elections, I mean, it's in a row.
I would argue three, in fact.
Yeah, but it's so easy to despair and to feel like, you know, it's hopeless. And it,
not on this program, you can't.
Not now.
Brian, thanks a lot for the call and for the great
work
you're doing.
Thanks for helping to get me out there.
You're welcome, and good on you for doing it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where despair is not an option. Get active, my friends. 45 minutes past the hour.
Burning up the atmosphere and cutting down the trees. The billion-dollar bombing of a nation on his knees. Anyone not marching to their tune, they call it treason. Everyone says God is on his side. See the lightning. hear the cries of the wounded in a world in holy war. Mortal thunder from the skies, killing everything they say they're fighting for.
And welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour is the Tom Hartman radio program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix. Quick updates here. The Tester campaign, John Tester, has declared victory over Conrad Burns in Montana. This just leaves Virginia unresolved. And Jim Webb, I believe, has pretty much said, I'm not sure that he has come out and declared victory, but interestingly, has certainly not conceded. I mean, we'll see how this thing shakes out. These guys are being cautious. And Alan, Mr. Makaka, has been very quiet. And Bill Kristol was predicting on Fox News today that Don Rumsfeld is going to resign. And George W. Bush has a news conference called for about a half hour from now. It'll be interesting to see if that's what it's all about. So we'll track it down. 1-866-440-8466. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan, WTKG. Hey, Rick, what's up?
It's a new day in America, Tom. There is a God.
Yeah, as to paraphrase Jerry Ford, our long national nightmare has begun to lift.
Well, if Allen concedes in Virginia, then who would have thought? We'll have both houses.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know,
but it's still just a start. It is just
sure.
A start. There, we have so far to go, and we have so much damage that has been done to democracy in the United States over the last 6 years to undo. It is mind-boggling, the work that is ahead of us.
Yeah, well, I'm a Detroit Tigers fan, and I know we got way excited when we beat the Yankees in athletics, and we forgot to finish the job, so you're right. And
Jim Webb has declared victory, too. I just got that. So,
good. Well,
so,
I hope that's true. But
that's
you know,
it.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the spin, and I think you touched on it. Certain right-wing talk show host, whom I won't even mention because I can't stand the man, is saying, well, conservatism won. These are conservative Democrats. But on the other hand, he turns right around and says that they're just pretending to be conservative Democrats.
Yeah.
On the other hand, L. Brent Bozell, you know who that is?
Oh, yeah.
Well, he's on last night. He comes out and he says practically, in so many words, that the Republicans deserve to lose because they did not uphold conservative principles. But then at the very end of his little speech, he says, but the media were so one-sided, they should be ashamed. Oh, you mean that the media said that the Republicans were miserable?
I know. These guys, it's just like Bush in everything in his life, from, you know, showing up for the National Guard to getting busted for cocaine as a teenager to not showing up for his classes at Yale to not showing, I mean, to having Harkin Energy go down and be bailed out by Osama bin Laden's half-brother. I mean, the whole thing, it's always somebody else's fault, and he's always looking to somebody else to take the blame. And that's why I think that Rumsfeld's going to take the blame for Iraq here real quickly and then start getting scapegoated like crazy.
Mention the governor's race here in Michigan.
Say what?
The governor's race here in Michigan with DeVos and Granholm. Granholm won.
Right. And good on her. God bless her. And Debbie Stabenow won in Michigan, too.
Here's the thing, Tom. Toward the very end of the campaign, I was telling people that I didn't really have anything personal against DeVos. He seemed like a pretty nice guy. Until the very end, when this man, a billionaire's son, had the nerve to say that welfare recipients should be term limited, basically, even though John Engler, the previous Republican governor, had actually said there should be no limits on welfare recipients.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was that the concession speech, the body language of his wife was really amazing. He turned around to kiss her, and she turned away from him. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's, welcome to the wonderful and strange and wacky world of Republicans. Rick, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to another Rick here, driving in West Virginia. Hey, Rick.
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Well, I early voted the week before because I had to be in D.C. for a work staff meeting. And here in West Virginia, we've got this situation that is eerily similar to the plot of Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. We've got this cat who is the CEO of a very large coal company. His name's Don Blankenship.
Mm-hmm.
And for the past, 6 or 8 years, he has funneled millions of his own dollars into these really negative character assassination campaigns against our attorney general, several of our state Supreme Court justices. This cycle, he chose to go after our legislature. In West Virginia, we've got a 2-to-1 Democrat-Republican registration edge.
Mm-hmm.
And he has taken every county in the state and has created this 501c3 organization called For the Sake of the Kids.
Yeah.
And so he's wrapping this he wrapped these attacks up as if what his goal is to secure the future for West Virginia's children, when in reality what he's trying to do is stack our legislature so he can get some more coal industry friendly bills passed so that he can continue.
So how did it all shake out, Rick?
I'm sorry, that's what I'm wanting to know. I've been in D.C. and I'm on my way home, and I'm just everybody, I've been listening all morning as I'm driving, and I've been hearing people talk about Ohio being a bellwether, but in my estimation, if this guy and all the millions that he spent here didn't get much for his money,
yeah.
West Virginia's been trending to the right since 2000. There's a, you know, it's Bible Belt, there's a conservative religious fundamentalist element here. But
sure.
It's just, you know, these ads were the most ridiculous things I've ever seen in my life.
Well, it's happening all over the United States. I mean, here in Oregon, we had several right-wing ballot measures and a couple of right-wing candidates who were being funded by, you know, a real estate millionaire in New York, Howard Rich, I think his name is, and
right.
You know, other right-wing cranks, fellow out of Las Vegas, he calls himself a sexual hypnotist, Lauren Park, funding these right-wing initiatives here in Oregon. I mean, this is happening all over the country, Rick. I don't have the specifics on what happened in West Virginia, but, you know, I'm sure you'll be able to track that down real quickly. But, yes, what this highlights is the need for fundamental electoral reform so that we can return democracy to the United States. And, yeah, I realize it collides with the First Amendment. Arizona's figured out a way around it. So has Maine. So have we in Portland. I'll tell you about it after the break. 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Jeffrey Feldman is with us. The editor-in-chief over at Frame Shop is open, one of the nation's leading experts on framing and how arguments are framed. Jeffrey Feldman, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thanks, Tom.
Great to have you here with us. Rumsfeld leaving.
Rumsfeld is just out. The story is breaking that Rumsfeld tendered his resignation and Bush has accepted it. So
yeah.
Supposedly there's going to be an announcement within the hour.
Well, in fact, here's the Associated Press. It was just handed to me. A day after Republicans lost control of the House and possibly the Senate, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld is quitting. With polls showing Americans upset about the way the Iraq war is going, GOP officials say Rumsfeld will leave. President Bush has repeatedly backed Rumsfeld. Just days ago, he gave him the thumbs up, telling him he did a heck of a job. No, I added that myself. He's been defense chief since 2001, blah, 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 blah. They say Robert Gates is going to replace him, former CIA chief.
So Rumsfeld will get the Medal of Freedom, no doubt.
Yes. Another fine job, another marvelous job. So, Jeffrey, we're talking with Jeffrey Feldman, frameshopisopen.com. One of the frames that is up on Frame Shop is Open is GOP hits an iceberg and sinks. The GOP, however, is out there aggressively spinning this thing, and they're getting a lot of help from the mainstream media, particularly the cable talking heads, the so-called news talking heads on cable TV, that what actually happened isn't that the Democrats won, but that the conservative Democrats won, or that the Republicans who lost their way, who aren't conservative enough, lost. And so the cons are trying to spin this as essentially a victory for the conservatives.
Yeah, it is amazing. I heard Bob Schroem, of all people, a consultant for the Democrats, in an interview on MSNBC last night. He was actually on a panel. And he made the incredible statement that it wasn't that the Democrats won, but that President Bush lost.
Yes, so, well, he's part of the DLC Democratic problem.
It was incredible. And then Tom Reynolds, who was in charge of the House races for the Republicans, was making the claim that the Republicans that lost were those who were caught unprepared. They weren't anticipating these competitive races. So they were trying to distance themselves. But the effect that it's had on the Democrats who are in charge of the House races is this talk about the center, which I put in quotes, that really this is a victory for Democrats at the center, which is a remarkable weakness, I think, the day after this massive victory by the Democrats for the House leadership to respond in this way by letting the Republicans control the debate. Because what really happened here was this incredible outpouring at the grassroots level by people who identify themselves as progressives, this increasingly strong identification within the Democratic Party. And it was really the progressive grassroots that showed up to phone bank, that showed up to really provide the momentum, and that drove this race.
Right, and Howard Dean's 50-state strategy.
Absolutely.
This was not the DLC. This was not the D triple C. This wasn't the Democratic Senatorial Committee, Chuck Schumer. It wasn't Rahm Emanuel. This was Howard Dean and Democracy for America, Jim Dean, Howard's brother, running that, democracyforamerica.com, and the NetRoots, MoveOn.org, and the whole bunch. I mean, this was an incredible progressive victory, but the mainstream media, they don't want to say it, and Democrats that they'll have on are the Donna Brazil, Bob Shrum, DLC Democrats who want to do the old talking points of, well, we need to be in the center. Where the hell is the center? I mean, I agree with Jim Hightower, that the title of one of his books, I believe, was The Only Thing in the Middle of the Road Are Dead Armadillos and a Yellow Line, Yellow Stripe. And do you have any sense, Jeffrey Feldman, of, you know, I mean, these guys are trying to frame the center. What are they talking about?
Well, they're very concerned still that I believe that there's going to be a loud outcry within hours, and I think it's actually already starting, that people are going to want action on Iraq right away. And I think that this position that a lot of progressives have, that they want accountability immediately, that they want some type of discussion convened in the Congress using the power of subpoena in order to bring the truth out, that this is going to be perceived as too aggressive by this mythical bogeyman, the center, that the Republicans use to hit the Democrats. So I think that it's really about this fear that a lot of Democrats have who are in Washington about being branded as weak on defense, about being accused of not supporting the troops. And so the Democrats in D.C. are treading a very, very thin line. I heard Howard Dean also before the polls came in about the Senate also attempting not to talk at all about Iraq. And there was a real effort by the media, by people like Chris Matthews, by people, I've even heard people like Cokie Roberts, who were attempting to lure the Democrats into a discussion of Iraq policy as a way of hitting them hard, broadsiding them on the idea that they were weak on defense. So I think it's really a fear in that respect. And the Democrats in the House, people like John Murtha, just need to have courage at this moment to stand up and say, look, we need to get the truth out on this. Murtha is talking about truth, redeployment and stability for Iraq, which I think is a powerful way to talk about things. And eventually, if he holds, I believe that the debate will shift towards a more confident Democratic voice. But in the short run, there is some initial weakness on the part of Dems.
The other big Republican talking point that I heard repeated over and over again yesterday, Candy Crowley on CNN, I heard her four different times, as I recall, say words to the effect of she would set it up a question, you know, have somebody, you know, well, will the Democrats try to defund if they get control of the House, because the House is where all funding originates, will they try to defund the Iraq war as a way of stopping it? And then she would rhetorically answer her own question, or she'd get somebody to ask this question, and you know, Wolf Blitzer would ask her the question, and she would say, no, because the Democrats don't want to be perceived as weak on defense. They've traditionally been perceived as weak on defense, and so they want to change that perception. Now, the unstated assumption of that statement is that they are weak on defense, and they're trying to change the appearance, not the reality. Yeah. And that meme just has echoed throughout the mainstream media now for the better part of 6 years. The fact of the matter is that the Democrats won World War I, they won World War II, they won the Korean War. I mean, you could argue that Lyndon Johnson got us into the Vietnam War, and that was a mess, but Richard Nixon made it even worse, far worse. But the Democrats certainly know how to fight wars.
Yeah, they certainly do. I heard that defund meme also come up in an interview between Steve Inskeep on NPR this morning and John Murtha. And Murtha very quickly said, of course, we're not going to defund the war. But the question was really getting at this larger issue that the media has, which is now that you control the House, how are the Democrats going to influence change in policy that in theory is dominated by the executive branch?
Yeah.
And what Murtha is saying, and I think it's actually a very, very strong way to frame this issue, is that they are going to convene this new political moment, a new situation for the debate to focus on, and that is going to be hearings eventually, where suddenly the country will no longer be debating the Iraq policy through these staged so-called press moments with the president, but they will be focused on these testimonies that are going to go on in Congress.
Right, and this is going to start, and it's going to be real. Jeffrey Feldman, Frame Shop is open. What about doing some jujitsu with this? I've been trying to do this for this program. We've been on the air for 3.5 years here, and I've always called this program Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. And people say, well, wait a minute, what are you trying to say? You're not a liberal? No, I'm a liberal. What, you're not a progressive? Yes, I'm a progressive. Well, why do you call it the radical middle? Well, because if you ask the majority of people in the United States where they stand on a series of issues, whether it's health care, a national health care program, whether it's strengthening Social Security and a national retirement program, essentially, whether it's coming up with protections in the workplace, strengthening unionization laws, rolling back Taft-Hartley, environmental protection, breaking up big corporations, doing like Jimmy Carter did to AT&T, which actually increased stockholder value, by the way, any of these issues, they are labeled by the corporate media as liberal issues, but 70, 80, 90% of Americans agree with them. So I even had on this program about a year ago, I had the president of the Communist Party of the United States on to show that the left is dead. I mean, here's this guy, and he's got like 45 members or something, and he's talking about, yeah, the government needs to nationalize everything. I said, you want the government making my shoes? Yes, that's how it should be. And I mean, there is no left in the United States anymore. The left is dead. We are the center. So maybe we should take their use of the center and grab hold of it and say, yes, we are the center. We progressives are the center. We liberals are the center because we represent the majority of Americans. And then they're left with nothing.
Yeah, it's a great strategy. Anytime that you can steal the ball in that way, grab hold of that word and redefine it for your own use, I think that you're on the right footing. Another concept that is not being tossed around enough but should be is the notion of balance, that what a lot of Americans are looking for is a return to balance in the government, and that's happened. And because it's been out of balance for such a long time, that people are out of practice in talking about it that way. But again, I mean, keep on beating this drum, but Murtha, who is trying to be the majority leader, he's running for that in the House. He has also been talking about that idea. Balance means accountability. Balance means somebody answering.
Yeah. You think Jack Murtha is going to be the new majority leader?
I think it's going to be close.
Who's his main opposition? Rahm Emanuel?
I think that's one of the things that could come up, that he would be awarded the leadership.
Interesting. Okay. Jeffrey Feldman, frameshopisopen.com, the website. Jeffrey, as always, thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, the True People's Radio.
It just don't get any better than this. That's about as good ever gets. If there's anything better, it's something I miss. It just don't get any better than this.
And welcome back. Viagra for your brain. Just don't tell Limbaugh he'll want some. Tom Hartman program, 21 minutes past the hour. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, our live chat room over at TomHartman.com. It appears that the chat server has temporarily croaked. If you're trying to get into the chat room, just keep clicking that login button. Eventually, it'll come back up again. It was down for an hour or so this morning, too. It's unusual. It happens maybe every 2 or 3 months for a half a day or so. So anyhow, 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Tom in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind today?
Can I gloat?
Can you gloat? Well, that's the danger, Tom. I mean, this is not the end. This is the beginning.
No, I know. But I agree with you that we should be talking. This is Howard Dean won, and Karl Rove is not a genius. He lost. And Howard Dean did this. and we should be talking that up and calling, you know, the talk radio and emailing Olbermann and talk about Howard Dean. Because I noticed what you noticed. He's nowhere to be seen. And they're, you know, it's like, what, this is Howard
Dean. That's because Rahm Emanuel's out there pushing himself in front of every camera he can find.
I know. And right now Bush is giving his press conference, and Michelle Malveau just said, yesterday Pelosi called you incompetent and dangerous. How are you going to deal with her? And he's all petulant and saying, oh, people say things during a campaign and stuff. And I was wondering if he was going to say, you know, like the Democrats are the terrorists and they won, you know. But,
yeah, right.
But, no, I just...
They won. We're going to have a higher minimum wage.
Don't
those
worry about
damn terrorists.
It's so pathetic how they're trying to spin this. Did you see how they tried to spin this this morning?
Yeah, I didn't catch it. Louise did, and she told me about it.
I love it.
Yeah, I agree. Tom, well said. Thank you very much. People definitely are not buying it. Joe in Brookings, Oregon. Hey, Joe.
Yeah, well, the fact that George Bush isn't giving his resignation speech on TV right now shows you what a terrible political system we have. If this was Canada or Great Britain, he'd be out on his butt right now.
The prime minister would be resigning. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, maybe one of these days we'll have we're not going to have proportional representation like that because that would require amending the Constitution. But one of these days, maybe at least we'll have instant runoff voting and we can open up the political dialogue a little wider than it is right now. Thank you, Joe. Good point. Phil in West Virginia. Hey, Phil.
How you doing, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
It is so good to talk to you. I get to listen to you for 3 hours a week when I'm driving my cab at night.
Okay, great.
And that is the most enlightened 3 hours I get, including going to school 18 hours a week.
Well, thank you. You must be listening in the evening on Sirius Satellite Radio.
That's right.
When they replay the program. So what's on your mind?
Just to let you know, Don Blankenship and all of his money didn't buy the... State House in West Virginia.
Oh, an answer to the caller from the previous hour.
Yes, and just a little background on that. Don Blankenship was rated by the magazine West Virginia Executives as the third most influential man in the state of West Virginia, behind the great Senator Byrd and Governor Joe Manchin.
Mm-hmm.
And he has worked very hard to buy the assembly. He bought, in the last election, a Supreme Court justice to basically get legislation and court decisions in his favor and in the favor of his company, Massey Coal, and for coal operators. Okay. This state has seen a direct attack on unions, on coal labor. This is a state that at one time was well over the majority of the miners were union.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're struggling just to keep a union mine open.
I know. The mining company where the miners died recently, Sago. I went back and I looked at their SEC filings because they had been bought by a company that had been bought by a company that, you know, et cetera. And two companies back, the company that sold the company that is now Sago, in their filings that they were putting out to potential investors, they bragged about the fact that the union had been busted and therefore the long-term liabilities like pensions and things did not exist or were minimized and in the future would not accumulate and that was like a good thing. It's like when you look at the stock market and you see the stock market going up, it's because they're busting unions. It increases profit. It just boggles my mind that the people on TV are going, well, the economy is getting better. The stock market is going up. No, it's not the economy getting better. It's the investor class getting better. Working people are getting screwed. That's why the stock market is going up.
Well, just to give you an idea, West Virginia, I've felt for a long time, I'm not from here. I was raised in Louisiana and lived all over the country. West Virginia is a microcosm of this country. The education in this state is not even a priority. As a matter of fact, it's something that the state does not want to invest in. Our flagship university is 8 miles from Pennsylvania, West Virginia University. Marshall University is our second biggest school. It's 3 blocks from Ohio. So much of this state has not been allowed to get an education. Our test scores are horrible. And the reason is if you educate a minor, he's not going to be controlled. He's not going back in the hole. You know, you can't control educated people.
Yeah, so they want to have the working poor. And
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, thanks a lot, Tom.
Thanks a lot, Phil.
Keep up the good work, buddy.
I'll do my best. You too. And, I mean, that's the bottom line is they don't want a middle class. The conservative elite in the United States do not want a middle class, because when the middle class gets economically strong, they start getting uppity, and they don't like that. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the land of the free and the home of the brave, but George Bush doesn't think that way. He'd rather lead with everyone afraid than handle things the American way. But fear didn't make America great. Fear didn't make America great. Fear didn't make America great. Fear didn't make America great.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Indeed. Welcome back to the radio support group of Buy It For We the People of the United States of America. And no, I'm sorry, George W. Here's George's. This is from his speech before the Republican National Committee or Convention in 2004. And it's just all about.
We saw tragedy arrive.
It's all about be afraid.
Be afraid. September the 11th. We saw tragedy arrive on a quiet morning. The evil terrorists. Danger. Doomed killers. Be afraid. The world will drift toward
and
tragedy.
It just goes on. I mean, this goes on for oh man, it's just incredible. It's be afraid. Be afraid. No, I'm sorry. We're not going to be afraid. We are, however, going to take an unflinching look at what's been happening in this country. And perhaps Congress will now even be able to take an unflinching look at what happened in this country. For example, what happened in Ohio. We'll be back with your phone calls in just a minute, but first, Steve Rosenfeld is with us. Steve is the co-author, along with Harvey Wasserman and Bob Fetrakis, two folks who've been on this program many times as well, of a book called What Happened in Ohio, a documentary record of theft and fraud in the 2004 election, the book behind the lawsuit. Steven Rosenfeld, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So what happened in Ohio in 2004?
Well, I'll tell you what happened in Ohio in 2004, and the reason we should pay attention is the exact same thing happened yesterday, except it was rolled out across the country with slightly different facades. But what happened were two things. First, in the run-up to the election and through the actual voting that took place, there was an incredible array of voter suppression tactics aimed at likely Democratic voters. This, we can go through them, but this is the modern face of Jim Crow, where people who are likely Democrats, whether it's poor people, elderly, college students, newly registered voters, you name it.
Minorities
were targeted, and they were targeted in different ways where they were attempts to intimidate them so they wouldn't show up and vote. You know, we saw that this year with the ID cards and laws. And when they got to the polls, the conditions there were not the same. And this is why they're really, you know, this is what the National Voting Rights Act is all about. They were not the same as in the white suburban precincts. There weren't enough machines. There were problems. The poll workers weren't trained equally. They weren't trained well. It just goes on and on. So the first half of the story of what happens in Ohio is the modern face of Jim Crow.
Well, and in fact, in Virginia, which is the last contested senatorial race right now, there were robocalls, or actually these weren't even robocalls. These were actual person calls. They were calling registered Democrats and saying things like this. Hang on just a second. Let me pop this thing up.
If you show up, you will be charged criminally.
If you show up, you will be charged criminally. To tell you, if you show up to vote, you will be charged criminally. Say what?
Yeah, you know, now the amazing thing happened, this kind of thing happened 2 years ago. Well, let's go back. This is an old part of the Republican script. What happened in Florida in 2000? Well, people were wrongly accused of being felons. They were purged off the voter rolls. What happened in Ohio in 2004? People were purged for being felons. They were also purged. 25% of the Democratic voters in the state's largest city, Cleveland, which had incredible problems yesterday as well, they were purged. And what happens is, people show up to vote, and then there are long lines because the machines aren't working. We saw that yesterday. We saw that in 2004. Their names are taken off the list when they expect them to be there, so that makes delays even longer. We saw that yesterday. We saw that in 2004. They're given provisional ballots.
Otherwise known as placebo ballots.
Well yeah.
Because they're less likely to be counted.
And what happened in every state sets different standards for how you count them. And the longer it takes to count them, it means that it goes through a more rigorous process to disqualify them. In Ohio, in 2004, the Secretary of State, who thank thankfully, was not elected governor and lost, Ken Blackwell.
Yesterday, yeah.
He redrew the precinct lines and reassigned precinct locations in Democratic districts. Then he didn't tell the voters where their precincts were. So they show up at new locations. They have poll workers who are improperly trained. And then he has a new rule that if you don't turn in your provisional ballot at the right precinct, which in this case is one table as opposed to another that doesn't have a label on it in the same building, it gets disqualified. And we found thousands of these ballots were not counted in 2004 just because they were turned in at the wrong table but the right building. So this is the kind of stuff that happens under the, you know, you complicate the process.
So we have voter suppression all across the United States. I mean, this is all, forget about hacked machines. I mean, that's almost a whole another category.
Well, Tom, you know, I said that there were two things that this story was about in Ohio. It's about voter suppression or the ghost of Jim Crow, and the other side of it is the modern face of Boss Tweed, which means ballot box stuffing and miscounted votes.
Right.
And, you know, and I'll tell you, that is the story that people, you know, and a lot of Democrats don't want to talk about this because, my God, we won. We stopped. You know, we stopped the war.
Right, but here's the question, Steve Rosenfeld, author of What Happened in Ohio, co-author. This is available, by the way, at thenewpress.com and in fine bookstores all over the country. The Democrats took, what, 24 seats yesterday, as I recall? I don't have the list right now.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me either.
24 seats in the House, I think, and possibly six in the Senate.
Yeah, possibly.
If this kind of voter suppression and this rigging of voting machines that you've documented so well in this book in Ohio, if this had not happened all across the United States yesterday, as we have thousands of reports, hundreds of thousands of reports of people in states all over the United States documenting this voter suppression efforts on the part of the Republicans, if this had not happened, how many Democrats would have been elected yesterday?
Well, that's a really good way of putting it, because conceivably many more. I can give you some examples. I mean, this is the thing. Even though, finally, thankfully, you know, we put a brake on the Republican war machine, it doesn't mean that just because the winds of change are blowing in our direction that we should have that this is the way we need to run our election system.
Right.
You know, and so let me
don't think just because the Democrats won that the Democrats won, because say we won 24 seats. If it had been a clean election, we might have won 50.
Well, that's true. And the other thing is, let me give you one example of how this is playing out. In Columbus, where I know a lot of people because we worked on the Ohio book,
a very Democratic city, by the way.
I'm forgetting her name right now. She's the number four ranking Republican.
Okay.
Anyway,
well, it's okay.
Yeah,
the number four ranking Republican.
In the House. Okay, what happened in her district, which is...
Are you talking about Mean Gene?
I was going to say Marcy Kaptur, but I got that wrong. I'm just spacing on the name. Anyway,
yeah,
the point
fine.
Is this. Ohio State University is in this district. There are 50,000 students there. You know, approximately a half to, you know, to two-thirds are registered voters. 50% of them yesterday were given provisional ballots because they were challenged on their identification requirements. So this is a race that has not been called yet, and they're not going to count those provisional ballots until next week.
And in all probability, they will not count them.
Because, and in all probability, they will
because these people had already been purged
to disqualify them.
Right, because
so
if you're given a provisional ballot, odds are it's not going to count. Period. Because the process of that leads to your being given a provisional ballot essentially means that you've already been disqualified.
Right, right. So the whole point there is that this is the nickel and diming, you know, of
democracy.
You know, yeah. And there was a Democratic wave that, as you actually point out, absolutely was stopped. I was talking to Warren Stewart, who is the editor of Vote Trust USA, which is a website that collates all these reports around the country. And he was doing election news last night, and I was doing election news last night. And he said that, you know, there are many states where, and many races where nobody's going to be able to verify if the votes were counted. And that the only thing was that the exit pollsters were basically telling the networks, hey, you know, there really was a Democratic tide, so people will concede because they want to run again and they don't want to, you know, come out as being a crank. But the bottom line here is, you know, we still cannot verify the vote, even though the winds of change were blowing in our direction.
I know. This is a grim situation. Stephen Rosenfeld, you've done a great work here. The book is What Happened in Ohio, a documentary record of theft and fraud in the 2004 election, written with Robert Fetrakis, Bob Fetrakis, and Harvey Wasserman. Steve, just let me recommend the book to folks. So the newpress.com and bookstores all over the country. Thanks for coming on the program with us and talking about this.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
It's an important issue. It really is. Steve Rosenfeld, 1-866-440-8466. Will in South Park, Colorado. Hey, Will, what's on your mind today?
Truth-teller. What a wonderful day, eh?
Yeah. Yeah. Step by step. This is just step one, Will.
Oh, indeed, man, indeed. And I'm thinking in step two, it's Pelosi's 90-day, first 90-day thing. It's the habeas and, I'm going to say it wrong, acuma matata.
Posse comitatus.
Yeah,
and let's bring back habeas corpus and posse comitatus, these wonderful Latin words that nobody seems to know what they mean, but they're vital to democracy.
Exactly. And the Patriot Act needs to be amended at least, man. I need to be able to walk around my country and say anything I want freely.
Yeah.
Without going to jail, without a lawyer, in their secret prisons they've been building all this crap. First thing, first 90 days, get with the FCC rules and get our media back because the masses are not getting it.
Well, and it's not just our media. It's the entire corporate infrastructure. We need a president. We need an administration. Frankly, it doesn't just come from the president. We need a Congress that's willing to challenge these huge corporate conglomerates and say, we're going to enforce the Sherman Act. It's actually better for shareholder value. Look at what happened when they broke up AT&T. It increased shareholder value. It's a good thing. It will allow small and medium businesses to emerge and compete, and they are the primary generators of new jobs in this economy. The vast majority of new jobs are created by small businesses, not large corporations. And it'll open up the marketplace in the United States. It'll be a good thing if we start enforcing the Sherman Act like we did throughout the 30s and the 40s and the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. 45 minutes past the hour.
I dream of a world where though we're not the same, freedom is more than a word that we say, where you can say what you think and no one would dare put you down. I dream of a world. I dream of a world. I dream of a world. That's a two-paper town.
Yes, indeed. Like I said, let's break up these giant monopolies. Man, I remember two-paper towns. Welcome back. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman, 9.5 minutes before the hour. Greg Gorman with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, on the line with us from Washington, D.C. Greg, I understand that at this moment, or just a few moments ago, George W. Bush basically said that his job is to protect Americans. Now, in the Constitution, the way I read it, his job is to defend the Constitution, so he's got that wrong. And then he says, he's fighting a war on terror with Don Rumsfeld, but Don is now leaving, right?
That's right. He's leaving, and the former CIA or a former CIA head, Robert Gates, will take his place. I'm actually just leaving Ohio, where I was last night for the election. Mm-hmm. So I know Victoria Jones is at the White House. I didn't hear everything the president said, but I can imagine that he was as conciliatory as he was going to allow himself to be. And this whole Rumsfeld issue today is just going to help matters on his end, I think.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's going to get him some brownie points, no doubt about it. Greg, you were in Ohio. I'm curious if you saw, you were observing the election. What's your take on how it went down in Ohio?
You know, I have to tell you, Tom, that I was very much waiting for something to go wrong in Ohio, and it was almost boring. You know, there were 16 counties in Ohio that had electronic voting problems. A judge gave an injunction, and poll stayed open. There mm-hmm. was one issue with some students at Ohio State, which is in Columbus. That was resolved, and at the end of the night, as you know, it's now being called Buckeye Blue State because it's all blue. And Ted Strickland, the governor, who's a Democrat, was announced as the winner about 2 minutes after the polls closed. The rest of the state went that way the rest of the night. And I was at a victory rally in Columbus, and people were literally high-fiving strangers. They were hugging. There were people who were so ready to see the Republican governor go that they were in tears. Mm-hmm. Everyone seemed to be very excited in Ohio.
That's great. That's great. Greg, let's take a couple calls together, okay?
Sure, absolutely.
Dave in St. Paul, Nevada. Is that St. Paul, Nebraska?
Yes, it is, sir.
Hey, Dave, you're live with me and Greg Gorman.
Hey, great.
You're talking with an actual, real, live, accredited White House reporter.
Well, it appears apparent to me, I'm deviating from what I called in for, that they forgot about Indiana.
How so?
Well, they didn't expect it to go so blue.
Oh, yeah, the press, the Republicans, the whole bit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you called in about Nebraska politics?
Yes, I did. Well, we had a chance to meet the president last Sunday. And so we gathered our little forces, the Central Nebraska Peace Workers and Nebraska for Peace, and gathered in about 50 people from around the state to greet him and his little forte into shucker country.
Mm-hmm. What happened?
And it went very well. The police know us, and they know we're not going to do anything really radical. And Secret Service kind of went along and gave us some levity. I was in with spitball range of him as the motorcade went in and out of the gates.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I think we made a big good showing.
That's great. Well, good on you. Nobody pointed a machine gun at you, huh?
Yes, they did.
Oh, they did?
Yes, they did.
Welcome to America.
On the exit, I suppose Secret Service, I don't know,
really?
Had the windows down and the guns out the window, but, you know,
it's like a mafia boss. He drives around with a car behind him who's got the windows down and the guns sticking out the window?
Yeah.
Isn't it tragic that that's what we've come to?
Well, that's about it. But anyway, we've got very little coverage on this, and KHAS TV, local Hastings TV station, did do some pictures.
Yeah.
However, they didn't make it into print. They made it to the website, but not on print.
Greg Gorman, these visits like in Nebraska, like Dave is describing in Nebraska, by the president, any sense on whether this helped or hurt Republican candidates this time around?
Well, you know, I think that we should look at a place like Montana, where the president went a week ago, and all of us in Washington were like, what is he doing going to Montana? And sure enough, they knew what they were doing, because even though, you know, it didn't help in the end, or, you know, it doesn't look like it helped, they knew that Montana was a lot closer than it was. Now, Conrad Burns had already said that he wasn't going to run for a third term. He did. He now wasn't going to run for a fourth term. He did, and the president tried to help him, and it looked like he did not help him. So, yeah. You know, I think you look at Montana, and, you know, it's a pretty good example.
Yeah, and Montana now been called for the Democrats, so we're
right,
still
that's right. So now it's all down to Virginia. I mean, I just, Tom, you know, I don't know about you, but I think that if you look at elections in 2000 and you have the 537 votes in Florida, now we're going to go down to 8,000 votes in Virginia. Obviously, you know, Allen's not going to make that up in a recount. They had a recount last year, you know, in their attorney general race, and only 27 votes changed hands. So it looks like a pretty good thing for the Democrats at this point.
Yeah, that's great. That is great. Regina in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We just have about a half a minute. Regina, you wanted to make a comment about MoveOn.org?
Well, I wanted to comment on the effect of the Internet on the election, both the liberal media call-in shows like yours and the call for change efforts.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking that it's really leveled the playing field and where Republican money really could have effect across the country. Now regular people can have that effect.
Amen.
And I'm wondering if between now and January we need to keep our eyes on net neutrality.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I talked with Ron Wyden about that this morning. He's the senator from Oregon who is filibustering this in the United States Senate, the attempt to destroy net neutrality. And, yes, we absolutely have to keep our eye on that. Greg Gorman, you see that going anywhere real quickly?
I don't see it going anywhere right away, but it will be a deal for the next 2 years when Nancy Pelosi becomes Speaker. You know, she's going to keep it on her radar.
Yeah, good. Because Senator Smith, the Republican in Oregon, is trying to bust Ron Wyden, the Democrat in Oregon, Senator Wyden's filibuster of the attempt by the Republicans to destroy net neutrality. Greg Gorman, talkradionews.com, the website. Greg, thanks for being with us. Good talking with you.
Always a pleasure.
Indeed. We'll be back with Mark Crispin Miller, your calls, and more after the news at the top of the hour. 57 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the True People's Radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Man, so much happening. Denny Hastert, stepping down. Well, not stepping down. I mean, he's going to continue as a member of Congress, but stepping down from the leadership, the Republican leadership. He's not going to run again. Gee, I wonder why. And George W. Bush admitting that he lied to the press corps. And it's really interesting. It's almost better if you watch this. You can see it over at thinkprogress.org. You watch the video clip. Because they ask him the question, you know, last week you told us that Rumsfeld was not stepping down, and now he is, and did you lie to us? And then he says, I lied to you. It was the only way I could get you to move on to the next question. And then he suddenly realizes, hey, I just admitted that I lied. And so he says, but I hadn't talked to Gates yet, and, I was still talking to Rumsfeld. And you watch his body language. There's just that deer in headlamps look on his face for a moment there. Here's the clip. Hang on just a second here. Let's start this thing again. Here we go.
Thank you, Mr. President. Last week you told us that Secretary Rumsfeld will be staying on. Why is the timing right now for this, and how much does it have to do with the election results?
Right. You and Hunt and Kyle came into the Oval Office, and Hunt asked me the question one week before the campaign. And basically, is he going to do something about Rumsfeld and the vice president? And my answer was, they're going to stay on. And the reason why is I didn't want to inject a major decision about this war in the final days of a campaign. And so the only way to answer that question and to get you on to another question was to give you that answer.
in other words, I had to lie to you. Don't you get it? And then he looks around and he chuckles and he's got this, and nobody's laughing. The entire press corps is sitting there looking at him going, you did what? And so he continues.
The truth of the matter is as well, I mean, that's one reason I gave the answer, but the other reason why is I hadn't had a chance to visit with Bob Gates yet, and I hadn't had my final conversation with Don Rumsfeld yet at that point. I had been talking to Don Rumsfeld over a period of time about fresh perspective. He likes to call it fresh eye.
Yeah. So the president has now admitted that he lied to the press last week. He's announcing that Rumsfeld is stepping down. Rumsfeld has accepted his whatever you call it. Rumsfeld has tendered his resignation. The president has accepted it. Robert Gates is taking the position at the head of the Pentagon. And what's significant about this is that Bob Gates was a member of this bipartisan group that Lee Hamilton and the Bush family consigliere, James Baker III, put together called the Iraq Study Group. And it was put together, if insider reports, if leaks are to be believed, it was put together at the request of Bush Sr., who's concerned about the legacy of the Bush family and the Bush dynasty and the future, political future of Jeb Bush, who they want to be running for president in 1012, or 2012, rather. 1012, yeah. We're back in the 10th century now. Man, sometimes you think we are. And the Iraq Study Group is going to be turning in conclusions, basically saying that we should do what Joe Biden and other Democrats have been saying, partition Iraq and get out. And over the short term, redeploy over the horizon, what Jack Murtha has been saying. So this is a guy who's part of that group, Robert Gates, and he's going to end up the head of the Pentagon. I think that this is a fairly clear signal that the policy is going to change, that they're acknowledging that the policy has failed. So, good step. Good step. We'll see how it plays. By the way, there's another, our main chat room is down. There's another chat room that is a bunch of folks have dropped into. If you just go over to our message boards, and if you go to tomhartman.com and click message boards, not live chat, but message boards, it'll take you to our message board area, and there's a second chat room there. You can click chat there, and it'll get you into another chat room that we have open and running right now. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, and Dennis in Salem, Oregon on the line. Hey, Dennis, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I bring this up at a probably not a very good opportune time because of the elections, but I received one letter with five pages to it, internally from Kaiser Permanente, and the CEO
as soon as he was elected. Well, you know, anyway, basically, they're in really bad shape. I don't know if you have any affiliation with it, but you can't get doctors. And, you know, the buzz is always going around Kaiser. Why is this? They advertise all the time, but we have no doctors. So I sent these five pages over to Law Story, but I haven't seen it there yet. But, you know, I think this is a slow train coming around the corner because, you know, it's basically like an Enron.
Yeah, well, I don't know, Dennis, and I can't, you know, without having any knowledge about what you're talking about, I can't push that one any further.
I tried up on your deal to email you this letter.
Yeah.
And anyway, I posted, can I tell you where I put it at if you want to go look at it?
Sure.
Okay, it's up on Alex Bennett Fan Club, up on Yahoo Groups.
Okay.
And just look for letters. It'll say KP letters. There's five of them.
Okay, great. People can check that out. Dennis, I just don't know. I can tell you, you know, Kaiser, actually a relative of mine works for Kaiser. Seems like a pretty good company. But the reality is that all across America, corporate America is in trouble. I mean, there's a lot of corporations that are hugely in debt. They're facing outsourcing and downsizing. The corporations that are making out like bandits are the ones that are shipping our jobs overseas and keeping the dollars here. And even they, like KBR, Kellogg Brown and Root, the division of Halliburton that has taken billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars for Iraq, or tens of billions of dollars in Iraq, has reincorporated in the Cayman Islands so that they don't have to pay U.S. taxes. So they use American workers, they use our infrastructure, they take contracts from our government, and they don't pay taxes. I mean, it's absolutely tragic. It's absolutely tragic. Daniel in Arcata, California, KGOE. Hey, Daniel, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm glad to be on the air with you. I had a group of friends over last night. We were playing poker and watching the returns, trying to have a little levity with it.
Mm-hmm.
And my concern is this. With the Senate as close as it is, and with the Democrats maybe losing Virginia to some hijinks, maybe not, maybe it'll pull through, Keith Olbermann reported Monday night that up to 40% of Tennessee's ballot was absentee.
Right.
With that race, with the Corker race there so close, why was it conceded when 40% of the people's voice hadn't been heard?
Well, maybe they had been heard. I mean, if you have absentee ballots, you can be counting those the day before the election. You can be counting them the day of the election. It doesn't mean that they're not counted. It's the provisional ballots that typically get counted after the election, the ones that have been challenged, because then you have to follow up and find out why they were challenged and decide whether or not to count them. But absentee ballots are typically counted. I mean, you know, in order to get an absentee ballot, you have to show that you're qualified. So absentee ballots, I don't know the procedures in the state of Tennessee, but in most states, absentee ballots are counted either before or on the day of the election.
Do you think it might have been a little premature for him to concede last night, though?
I don't. The fact of the matter is that the Republican Party played the race card in Tennessee and it worked.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's just the tragic reality of it. You had Harold Ford, who's a good man. He's very solid on the issues with regard to Tennessee anyway. I mean, he's standing in the place where most Tennesseans are in terms of the issues. And they run that, oh, I met you at the Playboy Club, call me, you know, this cute girl who's the very end of it, you know, where she's saying call me, where she's, as far as you can tell, buck naked. And, it's white racists in Tennessee looked at that and went, whoa, enough of that. And, you know, that's the tragedy of Tennessee, in my opinion. Mike, but thanks for the call. Mike in Berrien, Washington. Hey, Mike, we have about a minute before we've got to take a break. What's up?
Well, I'll take less than a minute.
Okay.
All the suspicions that there were things being done to make folks feel good about the Republicans, and one of them happened to be the price of gas.
Yeah.
I bought gas yesterday. $2.21 a gallon.
Okay.
I checked the same pump today, $2.39 a gallon.
Wow. So here we go.
They don't care anymore.
So here we go. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, they don't. And in fact, for that matter, if they can drive it up, they'll blame it on the Democrats.
Oh, yeah. It'll be
so the Democrats got elected, now gas is $5 a gallon.
It'll be $2.85 before you can blink.
Yeah, and $3 and $3.50 and $4 and, you know, tragically, in terms of the environment and frankly even the economy over the long term, that may be a good thing because it'll cause us to shift to more energy efficient systems. But for working people,
that's why I bought a Prius last year.
Yeah, I was going to say, but for working people and for independent truckers, and there's a lot of them out there, this is going to be, it already is. It's an absolute disaster. Mike, thanks a lot for the call. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank, 21 minutes past the hour. By the way, I'll be at the San Francisco Green Festival this Saturday at noon, November the 11th, on the main stage with a book signing afterward. This is at the San Francisco Concourse Exhibition Center at 8th and Brannan. And also, welcome to our listeners on KQEKE, the Quake in San Francisco. Very pleased to be on the air there as well. Larry Scott's on the line with us. Larry Scott is the editor-in-chief and chief cook and bottle washer over at VAWatchdog.org, keeping an eye on the VA because somebody has to, right, Larry?
So I appointed myself, Tom. You know, Tom, I was mad as hell, so I voted.
Good on you. Good on you, Larry. Well, I'm curious, what do you think the outcome of this election, what effect is it going to have on America's veterans?
It is going to have a lot, Tom. I'll tell you why. And it was put very succinctly last week on the Al Franken show when Tom Oliphant, the former columnist for the Boston Globe, said quite simply, the issue after this election will be veterans benefits and veterans health care. And coming from someone who's been around as long as Tom Oliphant, I think that's a very, very salient statement. What we have now with Democrats taking over the House, we will have Representative Steve Booyer of the 4th District in Indiana, who is currently the chairman of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. He's going to be gone when the new Congress is sworn in. Now, Booyer was reelected. He's from a very conservative district, but he's going to lose his chairmanship. He may, depending on what the Republican Party wants to do, he may stay on the committee. Right now, the odds-on favorite for the chairmanship of that House Veterans Committee is Bob the Mouth Filner of California. Bob is greatly loved in the veterans community. He has pushed for mandatory funding for VA health care and veterans benefits of every kind. And Bob made headlines earlier this year, you may recall, when the VA lost a laptop with the information of 26 million veterans.
Right.
You remember that incident?
Right.
Well, as the VA was holding a press conference and trying to do, well, we're taking care of it, we'll get it fixed, don't worry about it. Bob Filner walked up to the microphones and the cameras and said, and pointed fingers and said, you guys effed it up. Stop covering your ass and get it right. Every veteran in this country stood up and cheered when Representative Filner said that, and he is the odds-on favorite, and this comes right out of Nancy Pelosi's office, to be the new chairman of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. We're going to see movement. We're going to see more veterans funding. We're going to see a budget that gets passed on time. Do you know that during the last 12 years of the Republican-controlled House and Senate, out of 12 years, how many times the Veterans Affairs budget was passed on time? Once.
No. Once.
Once. Absolutely once. And whenever that budget is delayed, the VA loses money because they're operating at the previous year's budget. They can't tap the new funding. It's estimated that this year, right now, the VA does not have a budget yet, that, Tom, the VA healthcare system will lose $438 million.
Yeah.
In the first few weeks of this fiscal year.
Amazing. Now, Don Rumsfeld is leaving the Pentagon.
Yes.
What effect is this going to have on veterans?
Well, obviously, the main effect is on the troops. This is one of the best things for the troops and the best things for the country. Hopefully, we can start to sort out this mess that we've got ourselves into in Iraq and Afghanistan, make some sense of it, get those countries working on their own to stabilize those countries and get our troops out of there and bring them home. The fewer troops there, the better. The faster they get home, the better. I wish them well. This is an absolutely proper and right move because Donald Rumsfeld has made a mess of this situation. And I give my best to Gates, too, who's coming in.
Yeah, he's actually part of the Iraq Study Group with Baker and Lee Hamilton and the guys who basically are saying time to get out of Iraq. So
I'd say
this signals a major change in policy, not just personnel.
It really does, and this is good news for our troops, and, of course, every one of those troops will become a veteran, so it's good news for all veterans.
Yeah. The VA appeal of the Blue Water Navy case is going to take a year. What's the deal with this?
Well, Blue Water veterans have been denied. These are the Blue Water Navy, the people that weren't actually boots on the ground in Vietnam, the Blue Water sailors.
But we're still exposed to Agent Orange.
That were still exposed to Agent Orange because they weren't boots on the ground. The VA says, oh, no, you can't make a claim for any type of health problems or damage because of Agent Orange exposure. The U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims said, VA, you're wrong. You have to change your definition, and you have to allow the Blue Water Navy in on these benefits. The VA says, no, we're not going to do it. They have the Department of Justice file an appeal on this decision. That will take at least a year, and this is just more of the VA's delay and deny. So Blue Water Navy sailors are sitting out there for at least another year without those Agent Orange benefits and the Agent Orange exposure.
And this is because the Secretary of the Veterans Administration is basically a rich Republican fat cat lawyer, good buddy of George W. Bush, not an advocate for veterans.
He is not an advocate for veterans. He takes his orders from the White House. He's doing what he's told to do. And they're looking at it from a money standpoint. This thing in the long run could cost billions and billions of dollars, but it will be taking care of our veterans who have been exposed to it.
But Larry, those billions of dollars could instead be used for tax cuts for billionaires.
Well, why? You know, I hadn't thought of that, Tom.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we have to get our priorities screwed on straight here. We got to get our priorities right. Larry Scott, VAWatchdog.org, the website. Larry, thanks for the great work you're doing there.
Well, thank you, Tom. Talk to you soon.
Indeed. 27 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman radio program, the radio support group of, by, and for we the people of the United States of America. And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Listener-supported radio, supported by our listeners, supporting our sponsors. Please support our local sponsors, the ones you're hearing on your local radio station, plus our national sponsors, for example, Sacred Grounds Coffee, saving the planet one cup at a time. www.sacredgroundscoffee.com, with their phone number 1-800-425-2532, and Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX. Smalldog.com, their website. It's time to check out, and then we're going to get to your phone calls here in just a minute, but time to check out how things are going with the ongoing U.S. occupation of Iraq.
I want to know who the men in the shadows are. I want to hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are, but they're never the ones to fight or to die. And there are lives in the balance.
Security developments in Iraq as of 10:30 GMT today. This is from Reuters. Dateline Anbar Province, a U.S. Marine died from wounds sustained in combat. In Mukadia, a car bomb in a busy market killed four people and wounded six others. Near Mukadia, gunmen killed four relatives, two of them policemen, in a village near that town. In Baghdad, the Iraqi army arrested 41 suspected insurgents in the last 24 hours in different parts of Iraq. In Baghdad, a mortar round landed in the Shiite district of Qadmahaya in northwestern Baghdad, killing two and wounding eight people. In Mudmadiyah, a car bomb in a busy market killed six people and wounded 25 others. This is the area dubbed the Triangle of Death south of Baghdad, according to an Interior Ministry source. Near Kirkuk, clashes erupted between gunmen and the Iraqi army near a village 30 kilometers southwest of Kirkuk, killing six gunmen and wounding one soldier. Near Mukadias, U.S. U.S. forces killed 10 al-Qaeda operatives associated with foreign fighter organizations and rescued and kidnapped Iraqi policemen. In Baghdad, U.S. forces killed 4 suspected insurgents and detained 48 more. In Baghdad, a car bomb killed a man and wounded 6 others in northern Baghdad. Also, the following, these are the next 3 lines here from Baghdad. A mortar round landed in the northern Al-Aqara district and wounded 4 people. A car bomb targeted police commandos and wounded 4 of them in the eastern Baladiat district of Baghdad. 2 mortar rounds landed near the Al-Amin Square in central Baghdad, wounded 8 people. 2 mortar rounds landed near the Ministry of Health in central Baghdad and killed 3 people, wounding 8 others. In Iskandaria, a roadside bomb near a house killed 2 people on Tuesday night. And in Samawa, gunmen killed a police lieutenant colonel on Tuesday in front of his home, in front of his family. Brought to you courtesy of George W. Bush so that he can have political capital. The Iraq War, I realize there are some people who think that the Iraq War was brought to us courtesy of oil.
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant reserve, second only to Saudi Arabia.
I understand that. And in fact, last week, George W. Bush said, yeah, we can't leave Iraq now because of oil. But I continue to believe that the reason why we went into Iraq, that oil was the bonus. It was the twofer. That the reason that we went into Iraq was because George W. Bush wanted the Republicans to take the Senate in the 2002 election after Jim Jeffords had defected. And we had just a few months there where the Democrats ran the Senate. So they had to get some anthrax into Pat Leahy's office and Tom Daschle's office to scare them into passing the Patriot Act and then get them out of office. And so they did this whole hyping the war thing leading up to the 2002 election, and it worked. Or maybe it didn't. I don't, you know, given the voting machines, who knows. And then in 2004, again, hey, you know, we're at war. You got to reelect. This goes back to 1998.
As a matter of fact, in interviews in 1999 with respected journalist and longtime Bush family friend Mickey Herskowitz, then Governor George Bush stated, "One of the keys to being seen as a great leader is to be seen as commander-in-chief. My father had all this political capital built up when he drove the Iraqis out of Kuwait, and he wasted it. If I have a chance to invade, if I had that much capital, I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to get everything passed that I want to get passed, and I'm going to have a successful presidency," end quote.
End quote. And Bin Laden?
So I don't know where he is. Nor, you know, I just don't spend that much time on him, really, to be honest with you. Again, I don't know where he is. I repeat what I said. I truly am not that concerned about him.
Jeff in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi. First, I'd like to say George Bush is falling down.
Yeah, there you go. The Humpty Dumpty old story comes to mind, too.
And by the way, the comment of Bob Shrum about the Republicans really being losing here, I think Bob is qualified since he always knows about losing, since he's about as big a loser for us as we have out there.
Yeah. By the way, just a news flash here. Michael Ratner, who's a regular on this program, he's the president of the Center for Constitutional Rights, ccr-ny.org is their website. Next week, they are going to be charging Don Rumsfeld with war crimes in a European court.
Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, I wanted to report about some of the reports we got from at reportvotingproblems.com, and especially about Colorado. Colorado's a complete meltdown.
You live in Denver. You saw this yourself?
Well, I got about as angry as I ever got in my life. Actually, I cried yesterday. I went to a voting center. There are about 14 machines just sitting there not being used while the line. There were lines up to 5.5 hours long yesterday.
Wow.
And the machines were just sitting there doing nothing. And this is all because, and the thing is, a lot of people are concentrating on the voting machines. It's the damn poll books.
It's the purge.
It's everywhere. And this is the thing. Sequoia poll books were not working. People couldn't determine whether people could vote or not, so they couldn't even get provisional ballots.
Wow.
And we have reports of people who, you know, waited, and they had children, they couldn't vote. Most of the reports we have end up where people end up not voting after all.
Yeah.
And, but we're also in Douglas County, a very heavy Republican place. Apparently, they were voting until midnight, and then the machine shut off at midnight because they're not supposed to run beyond Election Day.
Right.
people were still in line at midnight and couldn't get to vote.
Wow.
And so we had some close Colorado races that may have been thrown by people not getting to vote here. And every single voting machine company, Diebold, Hartinder Civic, ES&S, and Sequoia, all failed yesterday.
Yeah.
We have people who couldn't vote. I mean, they'd push, you know, were part of the ballot work, and then they'd push a response on other parts of the ballot, wouldn't register.
Right.
And it just goes on and on, and it's every level of the system. It's from poll workers not knowing what they're doing. One case in, we heard about where they ran out of paper ballots and said, well, use your sample ballot. The person said, well, we don't have a sample. And they said, okay, you can't vote. And this is all over the country. We're talking about Michigan, Virginia, et cetera.
Yeah, these are the reports that you got on your website?
Yeah. And, you know, many of these people are willing to talk to reporters, thank God, so we can actually, you know, have, instead of just being anecdotal thing.
Are the reporters willing to talk to them?
Yes, we actually, the reporters have really started to listen. You know, when you talk to reporters privately, they are just appalled. And, of course, the stories they, you know, come out with aren't that, you know, are pretty mellowed out. But a lot of reporters are listening more and more. And some of the local TV stations have actually been beginning to do some rational things. And with Denver, what's really frustrating, the thing that made me so mad is the city council, the voting elections commission, they're warned about this.
Yeah.
You know, they were warned a long time ago. To me right now, the entire city council should be replaced here in Denver. Doesn't matter what party they're from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody who put these machines into place should be replaced. I mean, this is a felony against democracy to say that our vote, the most sacred part of the commons of the United States, the way that we tell our elected representatives in this representative democratic republic how we want them to behave, that our vote is being handled by private for-profit corporations who are doing it in secret, using secret software on secret proprietary hardware, and they refuse to tell us how it works, and they will not let us see the software. It is a trade secret, after all. This is a crime against democracy, Jeff.
Yes, and with the electronic system, people say, well, look, you can stuff a ballot box. Well, the electronic system, all it takes is one person, and one person can have a choice of thousands of areas to commit the fraud.
Yeah.
And a lot of the fraud is just making it not work right, not necessarily that, you know, if you don't allow a voter to vote, then you can't say there's fraud. It's just they call it disenfranchisement, which doesn't sound as bad.
Yeah, I agree.
But, like, you know, in Denver here, one of the really awful things was Sequoia already had a meltdown in Chicago. Just soon after the Chicago meltdown, where it took 2 weeks to get the results, Chicago rejected those machines. Guess who bought them? Denver approved money to buy those same machines.
Wow.
They weren't used in this election. But that just shows you a level of competence that we're not, that we're like.
Well, you know, part of it is that the Republicans passed the Help America Vote Act after the 2002 or after the 2000 election. They passed it in 2002, allocating almost $4 billion of federal money to be given to the states to be given to these four voting machine companies.
Well, in Denver here, when they were making the vote to give Sequoia more money, they said, "Hey, we can't turn down this HAPA money."
Right,
and that's
exactly
the same thing all over the place. It's a bribe.
Yeah, it is. This really, it shouldn't be called the Help America Vote Act. It should be called the Welfare for Voting Machine Companies Who Are Affiliated with the Republican Party Act.
And one quick thing.
Yeah.
We should stop calling provisional ballots. They're placebo ballots. Yeah. Most of the system is designed as a placebo to make it appear that you have voted.
Amen. Amen. Jeff, thanks a lot for the call.
You're welcome. Take care.
You too. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. You're in the middle of the vast radical middle conspiracy, my friends. Take no imitations.
This land is your land.
This land is my land.
If we come together and work together, we can pull the weeds that threaten to destroy our land. I hope and pray you understand. We cannot reap a good harvest with a bunch of bad seeds. Wake up and shake it up, America. From north to south, from east to west. From
transforming the world by revitalizing democracy in the United States of America. Tom Hartman here with you, 9.5 minutes before the hour. 866-440-THOM, our telephone number. And Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Hey, Roy. Following up on yesterday?
Yeah, I wanted to apologize for having to cut that short. That didn't make any sense yesterday. We had a good performance in New Mexico, or at least at the schoolhouse that I was working at, we had three precincts there in turnout with the absentee and early voting and the in-person voting yesterday. All three of those precincts topped 72%.
Wow.
And we did our thing. Unfortunately, it looks like Patricia Madrid's going to get beat out by less than 1,000 votes or something. We're just holding our breath. But it wasn't, in New Mexico, it wasn't really the machines, because we don't have the machines except to count the ballots. Mm-hmm. Because we've got paper ballots and they work.
Right.
And they work great. And Jeff was talking about how, you know, the thing with paper ballots is, well, you can always stuff the ballot box. Well, I saw last night you cannot stuff the ballot box. My precinct, we were ready to go home 45 minutes after the polls closed. Everything bounced. And in fact, because we had two undervotes for Patricia Madrid, we hand tallied the ballots.
Hmm.
And there was, in fact, two undervotes.
Mm-hmm.
And Life's precinct in the same, you know, she was working a different precinct than the same schoolhouse.
Mm-hmm.
They had two more votes than they had signatures in the book. It took them almost 2 hours to find those two voters who had mm-hmm. not signed the book.
Mm-hmm.
So we had the record. You know, I mean, the dedication that they did to bounce
yeah.
the votes
yeah.
said, hey, this works. This yeah. works. Now, we had the counters. We've had some problems in Albuquerque with the counting, as far, or not with the counting, but with the mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
And
so Roy,
they're going to balance out.
It sounds like
New Mexico's got the best legal, the best voting system in the country. Any state that's not prominent like we are behind the times. The only
yeah.
thing to push is that our university could run the program the scanner.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Roy, your phone is just busting up altogether here. I'm going to have to drop
it. I'm sorry.
We'll follow up on the conversation a little later. It's just your phone is breaking up really bad. Steve in Port Orchard, Washington. Hey, Steve.
Oh, hey, good morning. It's a beautiful morning, isn't it? Even the weather is nicer where I live at today.
But it's just the beginning. I got to tell you, it is just the beginning.
I wanted to real quick. You always. You know, every time there's an election, there's always like this new conventional wisdom that comes out of the election, and I'm sure this one will be no exception, but I thought an article I read about a week ago, I thought made the most sense. This article, I can't remember where I read it, they talked about that gerrymandering that we've, you know, feared for so many years,
mm-hmm.
where they carved up these congressional boundaries to try to, you know, basically a lot of people were saying it was going to be very tough for us to take back the House. But what I read was that when they gerrymandered the districts, what they tend to do is they tend to spread Republican voters out amongst as many districts as they can. And they never thought that they'd end up stuck with a really unpopular president and an unpopular war. And this turned out to be their Achilles heel, because they found out that they had too many districts to defend, and their voters were spread too thin.
Yeah, they weren't anticipating this big a turnout. But it, yeah, really the bottom line here is, that, again, Steve, that gets back into the Republican Party meme of the Republicans lost the election.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say very clearly and unambiguously, the Democrats won this election. The Democrats have a very, very clear set of issues that they're running on. And those progressive Democrats were the ones who won the biggest. And, you know, the ones who won in the most obvious ways. And because the people actually are concerned about national health care. They are concerned about their wages. They are concerned about the war in Iraq. They are concerned about the environment. We threw out Richard Pombo, the most toxic guy in the country. They, you know, they are concerned about the future of our children, the future of Social Security. And the Democrats won this. It wasn't that the Republicans lost it.
I agree 100%. Can I just tell you about one other story that I think is gotten buried in the news?
Sure.
I heard this once last night, and I'd never even heard of this person. And I only heard it briefly last night. Apparently there is a, as we both know, the Senate race in Virginia is still too close to call. And apparently there was a Green Party candidate in Virginia who got 23,000 votes. And,
Shades of Pat Buchanan in Florida. Now, actually, you say it's too close to call. You know, they called Florida for George Bush with 500 votes. We're looking at 8,000 votes in Virginia. I would say it's not too close to call.
Well,
you know, Christine Gregoire won in Washington State with fewer than that.
This is true. But nonetheless, I just found that very interesting. That's a huge story, and I only heard it once. But
we'll look into it.
Thank you, sir.
We'll track it down. Steve, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening to us there on Talk 1090 in Seattle. Coming up on tomorrow's program, conservative Peter Schramm. We're going to get back to debating conservatives here. He's going to tell us that Nancy Pelosi's big trouble. Yeah. And our Everything You Know Is Wrong guest, Andrew Goss. He says, Uncle Sam is cooking the books. That and more in your calls right here on the Tom Hartman radio program. Viagra for your brain. And don't forget, my friends, even though the election's over, the work continues. Democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.